My name's Stephen, and I'm going to be sharing a few things this morning. And one of the ways we're going to start off is we're going to have a bit of a panel this morning to talk about this exciting initiative that we're launching today on Compassion Sunday, which is our church partnership with Compassion. I alluded to it a few weeks ago, and today's the day where we're going to share a little bit about that and also ask you to participate in that on a few different levels. But to kick it off, I'm going to ask if my panel can come up. We've got Warwick Bentley, Andrew Merry, and Kev, where are you? Kevin Smith as well. I'm going to give them a hand as they make their way up. We have a unique privilege to be able to participate and engage with Compassion through this church partnership. Now, over the last month, or a month ago, we worked through the four spheres of influence for us as Good Life and what we feel we're called to be a part of in the years to come. And that fourth sphere is our world. And to launch this Compassion project, this church partnership, fits right into this area of influence, the world. And we're going to hear a bit about that and what that looks like and how we can engage in that. If I can just go to that slide, Jody, which has the map of Indonesia there. What we've decided to do as part of this church partnership is to be really intentionally engaging in a specific area. And so we're going to be engaging in the nation of Indonesia, and specifically over there in the box you'll see Indonesia in terms of its relationship to Australia. It's one of our close neighbours. There are, I don't know the number actually, I probably should off the top of my head, but I think it's something like 250 million people live in Indonesia. We'll be focusing on the northern part. You see where those two red dots are there on the screen. That's a place, it's called Northern Sumatra, is the region there. And in particular, the city of Medan. And then down the bottom there, you'll see the second dot is an island called Nias. And we're going to be, as a church, being really deliberate about focusing on those two specific regions in northern Sumatra and partnering with the local church on the ground, as well as Compassion Australia as we do that. So it gives you a bit of context of the area that we're talking about. And as I said, my panel of Andrew Merry from Compassion, Warwick Bentley, and Kevin Smith, who are both two guys that were able to come on a trip that I was a part of 2 years ago, where we visited Medan and the local church there and the different projects that we're also going to be a part of. So hear their view and their take on the experiences as well. But Andrew, maybe if I could just start with you from a Compassion perspective. When we talk about church partnership, what's that actually mean? What's it look like? How does it play out?
Well, good morning. Compassion was set up as an individual sponsored a child relationship, and it's been doing that for 60 years. But in the last maybe 8 or so years, the church has said to us, look, we want a specific focus for our church. We want to be able to make a difference in one village or make a difference in one region. And so Compassion has given the opportunity for people still to sponsor singly, one-to-one, but for a whole heap of people in a church in Australia to sponsor a whole heap of kids in one region. And so we call it a Compassion partnership. And it's really effective, works really well, where people are praying for that region, praying for those specific churches, for those kids. But also you get the opportunity, you can go and visit them and actually see what Compassion is doing. You can actually get firsthand knowledge of what's happening. But also you can visit your own sponsor child, you can meet with the elders of the church and the pastor and see just how it works in the area that you're making a difference in.
Andrew's actually just flown in from Africa yesterday morning, got in at 4 o'clock. So he's seen a lot of these third world and developing world nations in your travels. How does Indonesia compare? What sort of things can you expect in terms of the environment that we're talking about?
Well, Indonesia is actually doing pretty well at the moment. It's really seeing a lot of growth, but a lot of growth in the richer people, and the poor are still poor. And there's still a lot of poverty in Indonesia and in Medan. The kids that will be available for sponsorship, their parents will be earning around about $2 a day or less. So they're really needy. That means that you can, at $2 a day, you can afford your rent and you can afford food, but After that, it becomes difficult. So medical intervention of any kind becomes difficult, and as does schooling and education. So it's a struggle for these people to survive, as it is around the world with people in poverty.
Yeah, great. If we go to the next slide, this is a picture here with both Kevin and Warwick, where they did a house visit with the family and the child that they sponsor. So, Kevin, you met your little girl and in particular their family as well and did a house visit. I guess in the lead up to that, what was it like? What were your expectations, you know, fears, concerns, you know, in terms of not ever doing that? What were you sort of expecting it to be like?
I didn't really have anything to base it off except thinking maybe it's a little bit like South Africa. I was completely wrong. I was really nervous going into it. And of course, I think one of the biggest things is just the language barrier. I had no idea or concept of how I could actually communicate to someone. I couldn't speak, you know, their language, but they had translators, so that was good.
So I remember when we did this house visit, your little girl literally freaked out at the sight of you. No reflection on your good looks by any means. But she literally cried and didn't leave the side of her mum for the whole time. So, yeah. You've gone and sponsored this kid and you travelled around there, you know, fairly long distance to do it. How did that make you feel?
Oh, it felt great, you know. I kind of didn't know how to take it, but at the end of the day, you know, I can't expect someone to, you know, who doesn't understand yet. It would have been really scary, especially... they've never seen white people.
Or red hair.
And there's all red hair. And all of a sudden there's someone in her face going, hey, I'm your sponsor.
Sure.
So, yep.
And look, I think it's a really valid point that we can go and visit these places and think that, hey, we're coming in and, you know, we're going to be best buddies and all that sort of stuff. But it's like a relationship. You know, you don't just rock up to a cafe for the first time, meet someone and, you know, you're best mates. It takes time to build that relationship. And I guess for us as a church, that's what we're trying to engage. It's going to be this long-term relationship. And it'll start off and it might take a little bit to get to know each other. But I'm confident out of this will come some lifelong relationships with either the individuals that we sponsor, their families, and the churches and their partners alike. So Warwick, you met your little guy. He looks pretty happy to be in the photo. Tell us a bit about your experience and how it came to pass. And, you know, have you sponsored kids before? Is this your first one?
No, but I've been fortunate enough to meet both my sponsor children. Juna is actually my second sponsor child. Just before I did this trip, which worked out to be a work trip, a lot of the photos of mine, I was behind the camera for majority of this trip, but my first sponsor child was my first overseas trip as well. I went to Kenya and I actually found my sponsor child. I visited a compassion project to visit my mum's sponsor child, and I found another child there that was in need, and I actually got to meet her, and I sponsored her for... it was 12 years. And so when I heard I was going to Medan when my sponsorship with Juliana finished up, because she finished school and she went on to further education, I thought, all right, I got to find another kid in Medan so I can actually meet my child. And it was amazing getting to meet the family, and not just my child, but their family as well. Arjuna's dad is a little bit older than me, not much older, and here's a guy with two kids. At this stage, I had two kids as well, so we could relate a lot. Arjuna's 2 years older than my eldest son, and we were able to talk about raising kids and how much fun and pain is involved, and also just about providing for our kids as well. Arjuna's dad, he runs a motorcycle taxi business, and they also run a little store out of their home. And it was so good just to muck around with Arjuna, and I actually grabbed Arjuna's dad and Arjuna, and we whirled off on the motorcycle for 30 minutes, much to the dismay of everyone else behind. I was like, oh, let's go. Everyone else was left behind, no translator or anything. We just
I don't know what you're saying, but it's fun. But I think I'm really passionate about the home visits. If you get an opportunity to travel to these places, even if you don't have a child in the compassion projects at these places, it's so important for us to engage and actually connect with these people, because here's a guy who's just like me and he's just born in a different place. And that was really important for me, and it was important for me when I went to Africa for the first time when I was 18 as well. Is that there's people out there who are just struggling to make ends meet, and they're no different to you and I. They long for a relationship. And that ever since I met these guys, that blanket in my hand is something they gave me. It's a traditional Indonesian blanket, and they had my name embroidered on it with their name. They said, "We're your family." And my interest in Arjuna has, for them, made me a part of their family. And since then, I've been writing with the dad, and we write back and forth through the Compassion Project. And, it's impacted my life and my family's life. And I think if you don't have someone at this project yet, get involved, because we'll be going back and forth as a church. And I think it's really important.
For you, Kev, you know, after meeting, has that changed the way you interact with, you know, the family? Has it moved from just a picture on the fridge to now there's actually a relationship there?
It's definitely made it a lot more real than that, because when I first got the compassion kit, it literally was a picture on the fridge. But when you actually go and meet them and see that they've got brothers and mothers and fathers, and they're actually a real person, not just, and I know you know they're a real person, but when you actually see them, it's much different.
That's good. I remember part of, I had to do a side trip before this, and we were staying in Malaysia, and we were just at a hotel there, and got to know one of the staff, and he was a young man, probably a little bit younger, you know, maybe these guys' age, and just got to know him a little bit and talk to him about his life and his culture. And he was a Muslim man. And, you know, coming from the Sunshine Coast, you know, we're pretty removed from some of these other cultures that around the world. And, you know, just getting to talk to him, as Warwick articulated, they're just mums and dads who are just trying to do life and want the best for their kids and want to see their kids grow up. And they just have different cultures, different beliefs, different points of view on some things. But nevertheless, they're still human beings just like you and I, who deserve to, you know, have a right life and see their kids get put through school and get fed and all those kinds of things that we just take for granted. Andrew, maybe to you, just in terms of the church partnership, as a church, what can we, you know, what sort of things can we expect, you know, that, you know, to be walking into in the days to come? And what does it even look like when you do a church visit? What are some of the things you do when you are actually visiting these partnerships?
Well, I just took a group, excuse me, to Tanzania, and it was a church partnership visit. We go and see all of the compassion programs. So there's four core programs with compassion. So there's not just sponsorship. There's also child survival, which is mums and bubs. There's also leadership development, which is the older ones who are going through university. And there's also a thing called critical interventions, which is, you know, water, sanitation, microfinance. So we see each of those programs in operation. Also, you get to visit the child development centres where your children are sponsored, see them in actual action, and go and visit your families in their homes. There's a translator who will be with you the whole time. And the visits are really, really effective for just touching your heart with what, you know, with what God is doing through the local church, which is the local church are the heroes in all this. The local churches are the ones that are doing the work. They're the hands and the feet, the eyes and the ears of Jesus. What compassion does is it facilitates and empowers the local church to do that work, which is, you know, I always tell them, you guys, you know, you're my heroes, because they're just out there loving these kids and making a difference in their lives.
Yeah, that's good. It's as I said before, it's an incredible privilege we have to be able to engage in this way and partner with a local church in another country. And we'll explore this as the months go on and what that looks like and how we can participate. You know, prayer is definitely a massive part of that for each of us. Child sponsorship is part of that. Visits are going to be part of that in the days to come as well. So we'll continue to champion this sphere of our world as Good Life. And, you know, we'll explore that together and what it looks like in practice in the days to come. Part of that, as we've alluded to, is that there will be trips. We've booked in a trip for September next year. So you can be starting to pray about that and think about that if it's something that you'd like to be a part of. We'll go for just over a week and visit the two different cities that we've made reference to in both Medan and Neas. And, you know, we may split up the trip depending on how it plays out. Some people can go to the first part and others to the second, but all the details will be worked out in the months to come. We've got to get in early because Indonesia is so close. It's also a bit of a hot spot in terms of visits because it's easy to do. And so we've got to work in with the local compassion team as well on the ground. They send a whole team of people to accompany the trip. So as Kevin said, they've got translators and people to make sure the trip goes smoothly and so that you can see all the different elements of what we're doing. And today is very much about, obviously we're launching the Compassion Project, but out in the foyer you'll also see Varna are represented there, Donna and Errol Spence, who are part of our church family here. Started the Varna Orphanage in Zimbabwe. It came out of their heart for the people of that nation, so there's an opportunity also to engage in that, as are so many other people serving in different parts of the world out of the Good Life community. So why don't you give our panel a big hand, and thanks guys for being a part of that. Spill my water everywhere. I'm just going to share a few thoughts and I'll come back to the church partnership at the end as well and give us the opportunity to how we can actually be engaged in that to a greater degree. But this morning I just want to share some thoughts. We've transitioned out of the theme of forgiveness over the past month. And this week is the start of grace as we explore that from a biblical standpoint and what that means. And I'm going to share some thoughts on that as well as linking into this church partnership that we're launching in the days to come. Before we start, I want to ask you a question. It's a pretty simple question and it's this. What if today God wanted to speak to you? What if in this service, in this next 40 minutes or 30 minutes, however long we go for, God wanted to speak to you? Does that change the way we maybe come to a service from, it's just another service, just another Sunday, to okay, God, I'm listening. My heart's open. My ears are wide open to what you want to say. So what if God wanted to speak to you today? Called this message, What's So Amazing About Grace? What's So Amazing About Grace? Just think for a moment, if you had to explain grace to someone who had absolutely no concept of this word and what it meant. And as I'm preparing for this, I thought to myself, what is grace? It's probably easy defined by acts of grace and things that we would perceive as gracious acts. How would you describe grace to someone who had no concept of it? Here's a couple of things that grace isn't. It's not just a beautiful old hymn that we sing. It's not this one-liner that we say before we devour the food at the table. And as I look out into the room and see some of the poise and suaveness amongst you, it's not just the grace that some of you exude. And it's not necessarily grace, the old lady who lives next door. This simple word, which is very easy to say, I think takes a lifetime to fully understand and to fully put into practice. Things like it's the free and unmerited favor of God. Some people use an acrostic G-R-A-C-E, God's riches at Christ's expense. These are the things that we try and wrap our mind around grace and trying to articulate it. And as I looked into it and I just looked at the dictionary, what's the dictionary say about grace? And he uses the word favor. It's God's favor on us. But then as I looked a little bit further, there was another word that grabbed my attention, and that was loving kindness. And it's something that grabbed my attention, or I guess maybe captured my heart, and I thought, you know, I can relate to that. I can relate to that word, loving kindness. It's sort of, to me, it makes sense. That it's God's loving kindness for me that sent his son to this earth to die. It's God's loving kindness for me that every day orders my steps and plans and protects and champions the things that I do. So as we talk about grace, feel free to insert the word grace. Feel free to insert the word favor. Feel free to insert the word loving kindness, because I think they are all really great words to describe what grace is about as we explore this together. Our memory verse for this past week has been 2 Corinthians 12, verse 9. But he said to me, "My grace is sufficient for you, for my power is made perfect in weakness." I'll read that again. But he said to me, and this is Paul speaking, "My grace is sufficient for you. My power is made perfect in weakness." So what's so amazing about grace? I've got three things that I want to share with you this morning that I believe make grace so amazing. The first one, and it comes straight from that scripture that we've read, is that it's all we need. So to put a little bit of context around that passage, that verse that we just read, it comes out of this moment where Paul's sitting there and he's stricken by what he calls this thorn in his side. These challenges that he faces, and he's pleading to God, and it says that he pleaded three times that God would take this thorn from his side and remove it from him. And that scripture, that memory verse we read, is Christ's response to Paul's request, not once but three times. And Jesus said, "Paul, my grace is sufficient for you. That's all you need. No matter the things you face, no matter the trials you're under, no matter this thorn in your side, my grace is sufficient for you." And so often I look at my own life and realize how we try and avoid some of these maybe ugly, messy, challenging things that come our way. We try and shortcut them or jump over them or just any way we can get out of it. But as Jesus said to Paul, his grace, his favor, and his loving kindness is all that we need in these circumstances of life that we face. Because Christ is at work in the midst of those things. He uses those things to shape us and mold us to the man and the woman that he wants us to be. And Paul, in the end, actually says that it's a thing that kept him humble. He just had these amazing visions and God had been speaking to him, and he found himself maybe getting a little bit high and mighty, but it was this thorn in his side that kept him humble in the midst of that. Bob Goff is an author and a writer, which is the same thing. He's an author and a speaker. And he said this, "God isn't trying to make our lives easier. He wants to make them more meaningful." God isn't trying to make our lives easier. He wants to make them more meaningful. Now that means that he will use those things that we have to walk through, maybe the thorns in our sides or the challenges, the afflictions, the things that we have to face, to make us better people, to make us more Christ-like, so that in return our life becomes more meaningful. It's not necessarily an easy road, and I know I can look out in this crowd and know some of the journeys some of you have been and not know a whole lot of others that have been really tough. But today I wanted you to know that his grace is sufficient. His favor on your life is sufficient. And his loving kindness is sufficient for you to be able to walk through those things as you do. About 6 months ago, I had the privilege of visiting South Africa for work, and Ruth was with me, and we went to Cape Town, and we were attending an event there, and we're staying in a really nice hotel in Cape Town. It's one of the most beautiful cities that I've ever seen, and the scenery, the Table Mountain there, and the ocean, it's spectacular. But it's also one of the most troubled cities in the world. And you don't have to go far out of the city of Cape Town itself to be confronted with poverty in its extremest form. There's a place there called Cape Flats, and our very own Jeremy and Bridget Hilliard are serving in Cape Flats. So Jeremy came out and picked us up from our hotel and picked us up in their organization's van, which has bulletproof glass in it, by the way. This couple is doing amazing things in that city, in that region of Cape Flats. It was a privilege to go and meet with them and see what they're doing and have a meal with them and hear some of the stories. This family has suffered more than I could ever probably have handled myself, but it's His grace in their circumstance that has enabled them to be able to carry on and continue doing the things. It's that loving kindness that God has for them that was able to keep them going, even in the midst of great challenge and great hardship. And they're making a difference in that region. So Jeremy came, picked us up. We drive out. We have a look at their facility where they work and where they minister. And it's amazing. But it's right smack bang in the middle of Cape Flats. And, you know, if you've been to any of the things that these guys have shared when they've been here, if you see a picture of Cape Flats, if you can imagine as far as the eye can see, tin shed after tin shed after tin shed, crammed in together. And these are the houses and the community of the people who live in Cape Flats. And as we're driving there, we sort of, you know, maybe took about 20 minutes to get there from the city or half an hour. And we, just before we get to their facility, Jeremy points out this suburb next to it called Mitchell's Plains. And he says, you never, ever want to find yourself in Mitchell's Plains. It's one of the darkest, most evil, and the things that go on in this place at night are terrible. And if you're from South Africa, you may even know that region. You may even know that area. People are getting murdered and killed. It's just not a great place to be. And we thought, okay, that's great. We'll just stay in the bulletproof car, thanks, Jeremy, and we'll go visit your place. And we went out and had an amazing time and saw what they're doing. The next day, we were actually going to visit an elderly friend who lives in Cape Town. And so I had Ruth with me and my folks with me as well. And somebody, and I won't say who, was responsible for putting the coordinates into the GPS of where we were going. So they put in... the address. I think it was Begonia Street. And the suburb didn't quite match the suburb to where we were going, that we'd been given, sorry. And so anyway, we're driving off, and it was in the right direction. We knew it was over there somewhere, so we couldn't go too far wrong. So we're driving along, heading towards Begonia Street in whatever suburb it was we were meant to be visiting, this elderly lady who lives in a gated retirement village. As we're driving, Ruth and I soon realized that this looks pretty familiar territory to where we came yesterday with Jeremy. And actually, there's the sign to Mitchell's Plains, and we're turning off to Mitchell's Plains, this place that Jeremy said you don't want to be found dead in. And so we're driving along, and whoever put the coordinates into that GPS is starting to scratch their head thinking what's going on, maybe where should we be. And we drive smack bang into the heart of Mitchell's Plains. We're in a really nice hire car. We're four white people sitting in this car, and we stand out like a sore thumb in this part of the world. And I'm starting to get a little bit nervous. I'm in the back seat because I may not have put the coordinates in at that time. And I'm in the back seat looking at Ruth going, I don't think we're meant to be here. Jeremy said this is the place that we don't want to be. And sure enough, we end up in Mitchell's Plains. So we think, well, maybe we sort of go through Mitchell's Plains and we'll get to the place where we need to be. But the GPS is starting to say in 200 metres you'll reach a destination. And we didn't think this was the place that an elderly lady would live in a retirement village in a gated community, just by the nature of the housing and some of the sites that we could see at that particular point of time. So we felt it was high time that we got out of there as quick as we can and put the hire car to test and drove out of this place in Mitchell's Plains. And we are here to say that we survived. All that to say, I reckon there's moments in our lives that we have absolutely no idea of the favor of God, the grace of God that is on our lives, protecting us, looking out for us. Sometimes our own foolish mistakes by putting in coordinates in the wrong way. But his grace is sufficient in those circumstances. And I think his grace is sufficient every single day as we go about our lives, as he's directing and setting up our paths that we should take. But by the grace of God we go. Now, if I think if the universe, the creator of the universe, Jesus Christ himself, can come down and say to Paul, "Paul, my grace is sufficient," then I reckon we can hold fast to that same principle that his grace is sufficient for us, that his favor is all we need, that his loving kindness is all we need. And that's what's so amazing about grace, is that it's all we need. The second thing about grace is that when we're weak, his power is made perfect, or he is strong. When we're weak, he is strong. And this is what I would call an opposite spirit principle. Now, the opposite spirit principle is something that I've been taught by my folks. It's something that I try to apply to my life. I fail at dismally sometimes, but it's pretty simple. It's pretty simple principle, but it's sometimes harder to put into practice. And it basically comes down to this, is that when we face circumstances, when we face challenges, when we have opportunities in our lives, when we need to make decisions about how we should respond, we respond in the opposite spirit. We respond in a kingdom spirit. And we don't necessarily respond in the way the world would have us respond, the way that my own selfish, fleshly desires would have me respond, but we respond according to God and his kingdom and his biblical spiritual principles. Might play out something like this. When someone hurts us, how do we respond? Do we respond as the world would have us respond and hurt them back even more just so they don't come back again? Or do we respond as Christ would have us respond, the kingdom response, the opposite spirit response, where we respond in love? If someone cheats on us, do we respond by getting them back? Or do we respond in the opposite spirit, in forgiveness? And that's why this principle of the opposite spirit is in play here, because when we're weak, he is strong. See, this is the opposite spirit, and grace is the ultimate manifestation of the opposite spirit. For while we were yet sinners, Christ forgave us. We didn't receive what we deserved. You know, we make poor choices and we make poor decisions, but that's where his grace comes in. And he works with us. Doesn't mean we avoid the consequences sometimes, but his grace is sufficient in that. I love how Paul views this, and I'll read from the Message translation on this one. And it's his response to when Jesus says to him, "Paul, when you're weak, I'm strong." He said, "I was glad to let it happen. I quit focusing on the handicap and began appreciating the gift." Can we say that about the things that we're walking through that are a challenge, that it's a gift? "It was a case of Christ's strength moving in on my weaknesses. Now I take my limitations in stride, and with good cheer, these limitations that cut me down to size, the abuse, the accidents, the opposition, the bad breaks, I just let Christ take over. So the weaker I get, the stronger I become." And that's the opposite spirit. It doesn't make sense in the natural that we put on that, I guess, that spirit of humility, of servanthood, of love, of forgiveness, of acceptance. In the world, there'd be about power and, you know, claiming your rights and puffing yourself up. But that's not the way the kingdom works. We come with that opposite spirit. There was a time in our life when I was probably about maybe 13 years ago when my youngest son was about 18 months old. I'd just left from work. I was leaving a little bit earlier. I'd walked out the door and I get a phone call from my eldest son, Bailey, who was 5 at the time. And he says, "Dad, Elijah's not breathing. And instantly, everything within me, my heart just sank, and I'm going, I have no idea. What can I do? I'm 10 minutes from home. He's not breathing, and you're almost speechless and lost for words. I don't even know what I said to him necessarily. I probably just hung up, and I got in my car and drove as fast as I could back home. But it was in that moment, and as I reflect on it now, when I was probably at my greatest point of weakness. There was nothing I could do in the natural to fix that situation and to make him breathe again. I was separated by distance, and I wasn't able to reach out and touch him and breathe life into him or do whatever I had to do to make it right. So by default, I just went to the only thing I could do, and I just prayed. And I said, God, you please just intervene in this. And I don't know why, but there's a song that I was listening to at the time on the stereo, and I just pumped that song and I just worshipped while I was driving. And that doesn't make sense. That's an opposite spirit reaction. Because that shouldn't fix things. That shouldn't make it right. It shouldn't mean that my son's going to breathe again, but it did. And I am so grateful for God's grace, his favor, and his loving kindness that came into our world at that moment and saw my son start breathing again. Went to the hospital, everything's fine, couldn't even find what was wrong, don't know why it happened. He had a bit of temperature, so maybe it was just something that had stemmed out of that. I'm not for one moment saying that for some of you who may not had the nice outcome that we had are not walking in his grace. But I do believe that God graces certain people to walk through certain circumstances more than others. I've had very dear friends lose children, and I know without a shadow of doubt that God has graced them with the strength and the endurance to walk through that when others would have fallen by the wayside a long time ago. I know Bridget and Jeremy and Kate Flats have faced certain things that any one of us would not be able to cope with, but by the grace of God, he's equipped them to deal with it. Grace isn't dictated by circumstance. Grace is always there, and it's in different measures, for different times, for different seasons, for different people. When we truly get this thing about grace, in that when we're weak, he is strong, I think it totally changes the focus. It takes our focus away from ourselves and us and our ability and our strengths to make things right and succeed, and it puts it all on him. And when we take those positions of perceived weakness in the world's eyes, of humility, of surrender, and even grace, and I think like Paul, we too can rejoice in the fact that in our weak moments, it's when he is made strong. It's all about him and has absolutely nothing to do with us. So that's what's so amazing about grace. When we're weak, he is strong. The third thing about grace, and I actually think this is one of the most beautiful parts of grace, is that we actually get to participate in it. We, the people of this earth, get to participate in this spiritual, heavenly thing called grace, called favor, called loving kindness. We get to be ambassadors of grace. If you think back into sort of royal times and even modern day where we have ambassadors serving in different countries, you have an ambassador who represents the king. He carries the heart of the king. He has the ear of the king. He represents the culture, the values, the principles that are dear to the king. And as ambassadors of the heavenly father, of our heavenly king, we're his ambassadors on this earth. And if he holds grace as a really high standing, and we've seen him model it himself through his son Jesus, then we need to be ambassadors of grace. Chuck Swindoll talks about these two different planes of grace. He talks about this vertical plane, and then there's this horizontal plane of grace. The vertical grace is probably summed up best in the song Amazing Grace. Amazing Grace, how sweet the sound that saved a wretch like me. I once was lost, but now I'm found. Was blind, but now I see. That's the vertical grace, where God sent his Son to this earth to rescue us, broken, separated sinners. That's the vertical grace. But it can't stop there, because once we have this revelation of everything that God has done through this vertical plane of grace, we then need to operate that same grace that we've received on the horizontal plane with one another. Otherwise, we're just filling ourselves up with his grace and his favor and his loving kindness and becoming big fat Christians who just loving on the grace and the favor that Jesus gives us, but then do absolutely nothing with it and become a big fat stinking cesspit of favor and grace. Instead, we're meant to be rivers of grace that flow out. That just what we've received then goes out to our families and to each other, to those that we work with, to those that we might go to school with, to those on the other side of the world. We're to be ambassadors and rivers of grace, of his loving kindness and of his favor. Can I ask you this question? Are you demonstrating horizontally what you've received vertically? Are you demonstrating his grace with others out of what you've received from him? Are you taking every ounce of that restoring, redemptive work of Christ in your life and sharing it with others? A couple more questions. Do you free people or do you hold them hostage? Do you relieve them of the guilt and shame, or do you increase their load? Do you encourage others, or do you discourage them? Do you find yourself participating in a world of construction or in a world of destruction? Do you point out other people's faults and failures, or do you highlight their strengths and their accomplishments? In other words, are you being ambassadors of grace? Being Christ's ambassadors is not a new thing. Paul himself talks about it as we are Christ's ambassadors on this earth. And if Christ is at work in us, conforming us into his likeness like we've talked in Romans before, then we need to be ambassadors of grace, advocates of grace, and agents of grace, of favor, and of his loving kindness in every single thing that we do. Yes, there's no better way than to be an advocate of grace than to engage in this partnership that we're talking about with Compassion, to engage in this partnership and continued partnership with Varna in Zimbabwe. But it's about restoring the downtrodden. It's about repairing the broken. It's about operating on this horizontal plane of grace, because it is so vitally important. And I believe with all my heart that if we get a revelation of what this horizontal plane of grace looks like, it can actually change our lives more than we could ever imagine, and it can actually change the world. Because this act of vertical grace, it's changed my life. And I know there'll be a whole lot of other people here that can say that that vertical act of grace has changed your life. But what are we doing with it? Are we distributing that same level of grace to others as we have received ourselves? We have this opportunity where we can be about God's redemptive kingdom work on this earth, clothing the naked, feeding the hungry, setting the free, the oppressed, making a meal for our neighbor, looking after our neighbor's kids, helping someone at work who's going through a hard time. There are so many outlets of this grace, and we have so many opportunities to engage in it. And I hope that as we explore this further, and I'll share a little bit more at the end about this, that we'll leave this place not the same, that we'll have a fresh revelation of His grace on our lives and what our response should be. So folks, that's what's so amazing about grace, that we get to be a part of it. We get to be ambassadors of His grace on this earth. His grace is all we need. And it's in our weakness that He's made strong. That's what's amazing about grace. We're going to watch a short film. It's about a young girl who lives in Indonesia. Her name's Helena, and she's 8 years old. This isn't the first time you've seen me share about the work of compassion, and I can guarantee you it probably won't be the last. But it's actually also so much more than just the work of compassion. It's about this privilege we have to engage in God's work on this earth and to see people release poverty wherever they may live. So I'm going to ask you to please consider sponsoring young men and young women like Helena. The beauty in that story is that Helena was part of the project. And this is the work of compassion. You're not, just because you don't have a sponsor, it doesn't mean you can't be part of a project. It just comes down to numbers and how many they can fit in any one project. So she was receiving the benefits of the project, the education, the other things that came with that. But the thing that meant the most to Helena was that she now has a relationship with a lady in Australia called Renee. And that's the invitation I want to offer to each of you. Now, I know there's a whole lot of people in this room who sponsor a whole stack of kids from Varna, from Compassion, through World Vision, a whole lot of other organizations. And for that, I say thank you on behalf of those kids, because you are making such an influence in their lives. You are changing their lives each and every day. But out in the foyer there, we have a whole lot of other kids who need someone like a Renee to come and take them on. And if you're in a position to be able to do that, I would ask you to just please prayerfully consider that, because you will change their life. You will change their life like you and I have no understanding of. And as a church, as we embark on this church partnership, this is the privilege we have in to build relationship not only with our sponsor children, but with their families as well, with the pastors and the leaders of the local churches in these communities. Because that's what a partnership's about. It's a two-way thing. It's not just us white guys sending the money because we live in a really prosperous place. Don't for a minute think that these people are weak. They are some of the strongest people I've seen in any place that I've visited. They have a strength that is so deep and so real and so pure and so right. And we have this amazing privilege of engaging in that relationship with them. So if you can, please, sponsor a child today. Both Compassion and Varna will be out there. I don't care who you sponsor with. Just sponsor a child if you can. I want to go back to a question that I asked at the very start. What if God wanted to speak to you today? What if God wanted to speak to you today? And there's two things that I want to leave with you and challenge you on. And these, in some ways, maybe even the most significant things you've ever considered in your life before. And the first one is that vertical grace that I talked about what God has done for us, and that He sent Jesus to this earth to rescue us, a broken sinner, to rescue me, a broken sinner, separated from God. That may be a foreign concept to some of you today, and I ask that if there is any sense of desire in your heart to explore that further, that you'd come and that you would meet with whoever brought you. If you've got friends in this place, if you're part of a home group, come up the front. We can meet with you after the service to talk that through further. It is probably the biggest decision that you would ever make in your life, that we engage in this vertical gift of grace that has been given to us. For God so loved the world that He sent His only Son for me, for you and you and you and you. That's number one. Number two, are we living in this horizontal plane of grace? This is something that each and every one of us can examine our own hearts on. Are we showing loving kindness and favor and grace to those in our homes, in our workplaces, in our schools, in our universities, on the other side of the globe? Or are we bottling it up for ourselves, becoming fat? I've said it probably half a dozen times already. This is the privilege we get to participate in, being ambassadors of God's grace on this earth to those around us. Please don't leave this place without considering what our response is going to be. For some, it'll be to sponsor a child. For some, it'll be to accept that gift of God's grace through Jesus Christ for the very first time in our lives. And for others, it's going from this place, making a commitment to be Christ's ambassadors in the places we live. I'm going to ask you to stand with me. We're going to finish off with a song together, just to give us an opportunity just to reflect on these things that we've talked about. But He wants to speak. We just have to have ears and hearts that are ready to hear what He wants to say. Thanks, man.
My chains are gone, I've been set free. My God, my Savior has ransomed me. And like a flood, His mercy reigns.